And our first story, we'll talk about these mass deportations, and I'll be a little bit brief because I know we're maybe beating a dead horse here a little bit. I'm kind of getting that feeling. But it just needs to be said again, because a lot of people are really in denial about this. I don't know if that's you. I don't know who's watching this. But there's a lot of people that really seem to be under the impression that there's a deportation policy going on. And I'm sorry to tell you, it's just not. It's dead. It's over. It isn't happening. And the latest on this front, the reason we're covering it is because of this big exclusive from the Wall Street Journal, literally hot off the presses. This came out a few hours ago, this evening. And they have actually confirmed that it goes all the way up to the top. President Trump himself is now saying mass deportations are over. So it's not coming from Susie Wiles, the chief of staff. It's not coming from James Blair, her deputy. It's not coming from the other forces, the bad advisors, the bad personnel. No, we now have it confirmed 100% that mass deportations have not only been shut down, they have been shut down by Trump. And they have been shut down because Trump believes they are too unpopular. Trump is under the impression that mass deportations, even the word, the phrase, is so unpopular that if they keep going, they're going to get killed in the midterms. He blames that. He thinks that is the reason they're going to lose. So he is telling his personnel in DHS, he's telling Susie Wiles, telling House Republicans, stop saying those words. He's saying instead, use the word criminal. We're deporting criminals. And they're also changing all the policies. As you know, the Secretary of DHS, Kristi Noem, was recently let go. She was fired. And she's got a ton of problems. Part of why she was fired is because she might be going to jail with her alleged boyfriend, her alleged paramour, Corey Lewandowski, because the two of them are in some very deep crap over some of these contracts that DHS is giving out. And this is covered extensively also in the journal. So partly they're fired for that reason, but also Kristi Noem and a lot of people in DHS are being flushed out because they want to reset the policies. The new secretary of DHS is now going to reverse many of the mass deportation policies. For example, there's two policies in particular they're getting rid of. One, some of the biggest boost to the deportation numbers is coming from these big operations that are targeting Democrat cities. So you might recall the most recent operation was in Minneapolis. I forget the name of it. But that is when you had thousands of Border Patrol and ICE. That is what catalyzed the two protesters that died and the protests and the riots. That was a targeted operation when they surged law enforcement to Minneapolis and they started doing big raids and big patrols. That was boosting the deportation numbers. That's done now. That's over. So they did operations like that in Minneapolis, in Chicago, in LA, in New York. Under the new Secretary of DHS, Mark Wayne Mullins, he actually said, those are canceled. You're not getting any more of those. That's number one. Number two, there was a secretive policy in the DHS where ICE was making arrests inside private domiciles without getting a warrant from a judge. And there's questions about the constitutionality of that, legality of that. That's a big source of protest from the left, from the Democrats. Mullen says that's finished too. We're not going to be raiding houses without a warrant anymore. By the way, that also happens to be one of the demands of Chuck Schumer. That's why the Democrats have shut down the government partially and why they've defunded DHS, because among other things, they want ICE to stop the warrantless arrests inside private residences. So this is a stand down order. The mass deportations, they're not running on them. They're not saying the words anymore. And the policy is effectively dead. They're done. Whereas at one point they were maximizing deportations, now they're trying to have them plateau. Now they're trying to moderate the deportations as much as possible. They've changed the personnel, they've changed the policy, and now you're getting something different. And this is the story from the Journal that says, quote, President Trump is seeking to lower the profile of his mass deportation effort and has directed his top advisors to adopt a new approach on one of his central campaign promises. In conversations with top advisors and his wife, Melania, Trump has become convinced that some of his administration's deportation policies have gone too far. They went too far. Deporting 230,000 people is just too far. Biden let in 10 million people. He was letting in 2.5 million per year, but removing 10% of that total, it's too far. Guys, this isn't us. We have to stop. This is too many. He says it's gone too far. And Trump believes that voters don't like the term mass deportation. Really? Well, you know, it would have been nice to know that when you ran on that 2 years ago. Really? So Trump ran on mass deportations in 24. In 26, he says, I don't think voters like that. I don't think voters like that. Are you kidding me? Seriously? The promises you ran on in 24, you are halfway through your term, and now you say, I don't think the voters like that. That's how you won. The voters elected you to do that. That's what you were saying when you won the popular vote and the Electoral College and the House and the Senate. Now he's decided, well, I don't think the voters like that. Well, that would have been good to know. Maybe there should have been some transparency at the beginning or, you know, before the administration started. He says, the voters don't like it. Great. Awesome. Loving it. The president has told them he wants to see more attention on arresting the bad guys and less chaos in American cities. The bad guys. It's like when Pete Hegseth says, we need $200 billion to fight the bad guys. Yeah, No. We don't want to deport every illegal alien. We want to stop the bad guys. Right. The article goes on. It says the desire for an immigration reset is being driven by Trump's White House chief of staff, Susie Wiles, who believes the president's immigration team has turned one of his marquee issues into more of a challenging issue ahead of the midterms. It's a little challenging. As a result, the administration is attempting to change not only how it talks about the issue, but also what enforcement looks like on the ground. Great. So it's thorough. The shift has been spearheaded by White House border czar Tom Homan since he took over ICE operations in Minneapolis. ICE leadership isn't moving forward for now with those high-profile operations like the ones it previously conducted in big blue cities like Chicago, D.C., and Minneapolis. Arrests of immigrants have ticked down to roughly 1,200 a day from more than 1,500 a day when ICE was running its unprecedented operation in Minnesota. And by the way, it's lower than that. So according to the Journal, they say it's 1,200 arrests per day. I talk to people in government. They tell me the rolling 7-day daily average is 900. The rolling daily average number of arrests is 900. So quick math. If you arrest 1,000 per day, that's 365,000 per year. Out of all the people that get arrested, not all of them get deported. So if you're arresting 900 per day, The very highest number of deportations is 365,000. It's not going to be that. So we're talking maybe 300,000, maybe fewer than that. We're on track, in other words, for roughly the same or less deportations, fewer deportations than in 2025, if that's the rolling 7-day average, which is what I've been informed it is. Trump's advisors view the firing of DHS Secretary Kristi Noem as a prime moment for a reset. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, the president's pick to succeed Noem, promised to reverse several of her ICE directives. Great. Including one policy, giving officers permission to force entry into immigrants' private homes without a criminal warrant signed by a judge. Mullen said, quote, "My goal in 6 months is that we're not in the lead story every day." Trump has complained to advisors in recent days about bad headlines the administration received under Noem's tenure, and has asked aides if they were aware of her unusual contract approval process. On the campaign trail, Trump suggested he would deport as many as 20 million people. No, yeah, not going to happen. So when Trump ran in 2024, the slogan was mass deportations. We're going to physically remove 20 million people. It will be the largest deportation effort in American history. He said, remember Operation Wetback under Eisenhower? We're going to deport 20 million people like that. Here we are, once again, it's only a year and a few months in. So he's inaugurated late January 25. It is March 26. It's a year and 2 months. The first year, they deported almost nobody. They deported something like 230 to 360,000 people is roughly the numbers. And even if you isolate interior removals, that is still fewer removals than Obama's first year in office in 2009. Okay? They said that is okay and that's justifiable because we need more funding, we need more detention space, we need more personnel, they need more training. And so that's why the big, beautiful bill last year authorized something like $200 billion for Homeland Security. And nearly $100 billion of that is going to ICE. And a lot of that is going to the wall and detention facilities, all the things they said they needed. And they hired over 10,000 ICE agents, and they're buying the land and the facilities. And now that they've got all the resources, now they're telling us, well, we're just not going to do it. We're not going to say mass deportations. We're not going to do mass deportations. Stephen Miller was shooting for 1 million per year was his target. Now they're going to get, if you're lucky, maybe a third of that, maybe a quarter of that. They said 20 million, which would have been 5 million per year. Now you're going to get maybe a quarter million per year. So you're getting 20 times less. Literally, you're getting 20 times less than what they promised. They're changing the slogan, not even in the middle, in the first year, and now it's over. And Trump was convinced to do this because Susie Wiles told him it's unpopular. Now, here's what really happened, okay? And I can say this with some authority because I predicted it. I told you this is exactly how it would play out, which is that you're going to try to deport all these people. Liberals are going to freak out. The media is going to shine a spotlight on it, and they're going to cast it in a very negative light. And what this is going to do is generate bad press, bad publicity, and low approval ratings. It's those two things. And if you know anything about Trump, know this. Trump, because he's an egomaniac, he is absolutely allergic to both of those things. He hates bad press. He hates bad headlines. He hates low approval ratings. And so this was inevitable that it would play out this way. It was just inevitable because if you are going to do a massive deportation effort, it's not going to go unnoticed. And the Democrat city machines, these political machines in Chicago, New York, LA, they're going to fight it tooth and nail with their activists, with the media, with the entertainment industry, all the above. And it's going to generate a lot of controversy. It's going to be very contentious, and that's going to drive negative media. Negative media begets low approval, low favorability. And so it was always a question of, if you're going to do this, you need to have the political will to withstand that pressure. That was really the question. If you wanted to accurately predict, will mass deportations happen, you had to really ask the question, if they try, if they marshal the resources to do it, will they then be able to withstand the inevitable pressure which will come as a result? And that's a question about Trump as a man. And this is why in 2024, I said, you're not going to get it, because Trump is not going to stick it out. He's going to get those bad headlines. He's going to get the lower approval ratings. And the second that happens, he's going to pick up the phone and he's going to call Stephen Miller and he's going to shut it down. And do you want to know why I knew that would be the case? Because it already happened. That already happened. And it happens with everything. It literally happens with COVID. It happened with BLM. It happened with this in the first term. And I've told this story a million times, but this is the thing. People that got red-pilled after COVID, they just weren't there. They didn't watch it. The history has either been forgotten or rewritten. But I was actually there up close and personal. I had friends in the admin in 2018. And that is precisely how it went down in the first term, which is that they started to try to build the wall. They started to try to deport a lot of people. You might remember they had that family separation policy. That's how these huge caravans of illegals from the Northern Triangle were getting in. All these illegals would come to the border with an unaccompanied minor. It wasn't always a family member, a child, and their child, son, daughter, their nephew, cousin. Frequently, they were strangers. But if an illegal alien had an unaccompanied minor with them, because the minors couldn't be detained in the same space as the adults, they would catch those people and release them. Those people would surrender at a port of entry with their minor in tow. And because the illegal and the minor cannot be detained in the same facility, they'd be picked up and they'd be sent out into the country. So Trump had a family separation policy where the minors were detained separately from the adults. And that allowed them to be detained indefinitely at the border. And so they weren't caught and released. Well, that's where the story about kids in cages started, because they said the Trump administration is imprisoning children in cages like the Holocaust. And they destroyed Trump with that in 2018 in the midterm election. They said it's kids in cages, concentration camps. They did it at the Oscars, at the Grammys, just like they did this year. And I have it on authority from people in the admin that it went down the same way. Trump picked up the phone and said, Stephen Miller, we got to stop. In the previous administration, it was Christian Nielsen, I think was the name, so long ago. But Trump picked up the phone 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and said, we're getting killed. They're talking about kids in cages. And they ended the policy. They reversed the policy. That's exactly what they're doing right now. And that's because that's who Trump is. And ultimately, that is who you have to blame, because I can already see what is happening. There's sort of like two different camps of denialists. And there's one camp that just insists this is not happening. Let's be very honest. Mass deportations, at this point, you can say it was a lie. It was a lie. It was a scam. It was a fraud. Trump said we were going to have 20 million deportations. We're not getting anything close to that. It's not happening. But there are a lot of people that are in denial, and they will just believe anything. So they're coping about the retreat from Minneapolis. They're coping about the self-deportation numbers, inflating those numbers, using the community survey and some data artifacts to overestimate it by an order of magnitude. They're just simply in denial. They still think that someday, one day, mass deportations are going to happen. Like, they just don't live in reality. But then there's another camp of denialists that say it's not Trump's fault. They say it's his advisors, it's his personnel, it's all these people around him that are failing him. If only he had the right people. And here's the irony. Maybe it's not ironic, but here's why that's not true. Unlike the first term, that is totally not true in the second term. Stephen Miller has way more power. He's the deputy chief of staff. You have a lot of really good people in Border Patrol and in DHS and in ICE. And you even have people in the administration that are actually reaching out to outside groups. They spun up this website. It's called Mass Deportation Coalition. Something like that. I don't know the actual URL. But if you look this up, Coalition for Mass Deportations, there is this outside group of nonprofits and activist groups. They're begging the Trump administration to follow through. They're trying to lean on the administration. And there are actually a lot of people in the administration who are working with that group. And they're pleading with them, saying, please criticize Trump. Please put pressure on Trump, because they can't do it from the inside. So ironically, you know, in the first term, you could make the argument and say, yeah, well, Trump has all these bad people. They don't want to see the deportations happen. They're disobeying Trump. They're giving him bad advice, whatever. In the second term, it's the opposite. No, you have a lot of good people giving Trump advice. You have a lot of good people in DHS. You have a lot of good personnel. They want to see it happen. They are running into the obstacle of Trump himself. If it were up to them, it would be happening, but it's up to Trump. And so now we sort of solved for X. Who was the problem? It was always Trump. It was never the personnel. It was always Trump. And you want to know why? Because Trump always had the power. Trump appoints the personnel. Trump chooses the advisors. Trump has the discretion to listen to one advisor and not another. He does it all the time. Case in point, Brooke Rollins is the Secretary of Agriculture. So she represents the big agriculture interest. And big agriculture loves illegal immigration because they employ low-skilled illegal aliens on the farms. Consequently, Brooke Rollins doesn't want to see a ton of illegal immigrant migrant labor deported, because she, in a sense, is captured by the industry that she's supposed to administrate, that she's supposed to regulate. So Brooke Rollins is against deportations. She's against job site raids. She's in favor of expanding visas for migrant workers. Kristi Noem, on the other hand, well, as Secretary of DHS, Homeland Security, her job, her mandate is to deport as many people as possible. And Stephen Miller in the White House, as the Deputy Chief of Staff, he is trying to work with Kristi Noem to get these deportations up. And he's encouraging job site raids and getting the migrant farm workers out and raiding a meat processing plant in Nebraska and a Hyundai plant in Georgia and so on. Well, you see that in the court of Trump, there's two different people with two different agendas, and they're going to have different advice. So Kristi Noem is going to go to Trump and say, we want to do all the deportations. And Brooke Rollins is going to go to Trump and say, we want more visas and fewer deportations. Well, who does Trump listen to? He's got a better relationship with Brooke Rollins. She was in the first admin. She ran AFPI, America First Policy Institute, which is the official Trump think tank after Trump left office. And Trump actually sidelined Project 2025 at Heritage, which was good, to prioritize AFPI, because those are his people. And so it's like in the first term, everybody said, oh, it's the personnel, it's the advisors, it's everybody else. We need to put the right people in front of Trump. But Trump consistently chooses all the wrong people and consistently makes all the wrong decisions. In 2024, he had an option, AFPI or Project 2025. He chose AFPI. With regard to deportations, he had a choice. Stephen Miller and Kristi Noem or Brooke Rollins and Susie Wiles. He chose Brooke Rollins and Susie Wiles. And ultimately, the decision came down to the fact that he didn't want the bad press. What you need to understand about Trump is that his dream is to be beloved by New York City. He wants the New York Times to love him. He wants CNN to love him. Anyone that knows Trump is nodding their head right now. And I'm sure there are people watching the show that know Trump, because Trump is like a girl. Every day he's on the phone all day, kicking his feet and giggling. I'm not making this up, calling people for hours and hours and hours. This is the greatest economy. I'm the greatest president, blah, blah. Anyone who knows Trump and talks to him knows this is true. His dream is the approval and the validation of the New York Times, of New York City. He wants to be beloved. And so if you're doing something unpopular with the media or the entertainment industry, the left, the masses, Trump is never gonna follow through, because he doesn't want to upset those people. And so I said in 2024, you're not gonna get mass deportations because Trump is gonna cuck, because Trump wants to be loved by the media, and they're going to hate this. And because Trump ultimately chose Brooke Rollins over Project 2025, he chose Chris LaCivita and Susie Wiles over Hope Hicks and John McEntee, let's say. He chose the disloyal personnel that threw him under the bus after January 6th over the good personnel that tried to salvage his White House in 2020. So I knew based on the personnel choices, I knew based on his temperament that he had not changed at all. And by that, I mean not for the better, that we were going to get the exact same thing and the exact same story. And this is how Trump has been conditioned over time. I want you to notice something also. In 2024, there was so much fanfare around Trump, you almost forget how it was in the first campaign. In 2016, everybody hated Trump. The media hated Trump. All the institutions hated Trump. The Republican Party hated Trump. Everybody hated Trump. And why is that? Because in 2016, Trump was actually a radical. Trump was actually an insurgent force. So who didn't like him? The deep state, the establishment, the institutions. That was the nucleus of Trumpism. There was actually a great article in The Spectator by Christopher Caldwell, and he said this, and it's brilliant. He said that the actual nucleus of Trumpism is the idea of the deep state, and that Trump is this democratic populist force against those institutions. And so in 2016, that's how it felt. It was this populist wave, the people and Trump at the front of it, against the establishment, the institutions, the deep state. And all of these institutions are very incestuous. It's the permanent bureaucracy in Washington. It's the lobbyists, the consultants, the super PACs. But it's also the Ivy Leagues and academia and big law. It's also Wall Street and the asset managers and private equity. And it's also the entertainment industry, Hollywood and the mainstream media. It's also Silicon Valley. At that time, it was big tech. So it was all of the institutions, all of the powerful, the true deep state, holistically, against Trump. But what you saw in 2024 is that all the institutions actually acquiesced to Trump. Did you notice? Again, this gets back to a lot of people just weren't there for the original victory. In 2016, it was like us against the world. And all the media coverage was negative, and they were ripping him apart every day, and the party was always trying basically to sabotage him, his own party. In 2024, different story. Who was at the inauguration? Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, OpenAI, Elon Musk. They were all there. Mark Zuckerberg didn't even put any money into this election. He put $300 million against Trump in 2020. And Tim Mellon donated $200 million to Trump. And Elon Musk donated $300 million to Trump. And the Israel lobby donated to Trump. And so did Ken Griffin from Citadel. And so did Andreessen Horowitz. And if you looked, whereas in 2016, the small dollar contributions were 60% of Trump's fundraising, in 2024, it was about 30%. So it flipped. And they've conditioned Trump to do the things that they want him to do. And what they want him to do is to keep the flow of cheap labor, cheap skilled labor, cheap unskilled labor. What they want him to do is to bomb Iran, keep the weapons flowing into Ukraine. They want him to intervene in the Congo for the minerals. They want him to deregulate AI. They want their corporate tax cut in the big, beautiful bill. They have conditioned him because Trump wants... He wants to be liked. He wants the approval of the establishment. And this is why they've effectively stood down. And they condition him by allowing him to take the path of least resistance and never fight those battles. And everybody that's making excuses for him, you need to realize we elected him to fight those battles. We elected him to be hated by the Israel lobby, to be hated by Wall Street, to be hated by the multinational corporations, to be hated by the asset managers. We elected him to be hated by those people and to fight those people and ultimately to defeat them. Now it's the opposite. Now he's fighting against his own people to protect them. And this is what is so sick about this influencer cadre that is constantly trying to tell you that everything's on the up and up. Because while Trump opened up the floodgates for more migrant workers on farms, more H-1Bs, more foreign student visas for the universities, while Trump says he's okay with home prices going up indefinitely, he says we want housing to be more expensive than ever because we're protecting the people that own them, and Trump is celebrating the stock market rising, he's cutting the corporate tax rates and doing all those things. In the meantime, he's not releasing the Epstein files. He's going to war with Iran, not building the wall, not carrying out the mass deportations. And so now he's beloved by the institutions. Trump has told the institutions, get behind me. I'll protect you. I'll protect your data centers. I'll protect your home values. I'll protect the asset bubble. I'll protect your profits and your cheap labor. I'll protect your complicity in Jeffrey Epstein's island. And it is him and the influencers taking the fight to the people, attacking the people. If you want the Epstein files, I don't want your vote. If you're against the war with Iran, you're not MAGA. If you attack Mark Levin, you're not MAGA. If you don't like the big, beautiful bill, you're not MAGA. Now the war is on behalf of the institutions against the people. It's on behalf of the elite against the democratic forces. This is, in a nutshell, what is going on. And that's why you have to say Trump is the problem. Now, I don't expect everybody to maybe go head on against Trump. Maybe that's suicidal politically because Trump is still extremely popular. He's still the leader of the party and the movement and the president, and he's at the top of the pyramid. But ultimately, you must realize that there's never going to be a populist movement until Trump is out of the picture. And I'm not insinuating anything there. I just mean until Trump is out of office, until Trump is unpopular, until he is basically rejected or exits the stage, he is always going to, he's not only not going to be the guy, he's going to prevent the guy from emerging. He cannot do it, just constitutionally. Cannot, will not deliver the victory. He's not Caesar. He's not a leader. He's not that guy. And not only is he not the guy, he's depriving us of the guy, but as long as he's around, there is no space for the guy to emerge. Because if that guy were to emerge, he would be attacked by Trump. Case in point, Tucker Carlson. Case in point, Megyn Kelly, Marjorie Greene, Thomas Massie. All the people that have critiqued Trump for the ways in which he has diverged from America First, the ways in which he has betrayed us to the deep state, Trump has used his political capital, he's used his popular support to bludgeon those people and sabotage their careers. So whereas a Marjorie Greene, a Thomas Massie, a Tucker, whereas they might have been able to take the baton or do something or climb the ladder, Trump is not only not helping them, he is suppressing them as potential competitors, challengers. That is why Trump really is the sickness. And this is why I said in 24, it's better actually, maybe, if he loses. Because you see how him being this 80,000-pound gorilla in the middle of the room, him being the center of gravity, him being this cult-like figure that cannot be questioned, cannot be criticized, he's the nucleus, everything orbits around him, everything is contingent upon him. You see how he has actually become the biggest opponent. He's become the biggest liability, actually, in a counterintuitive way. You might say, well, he's not perfect, but he's good. No, he's the enemy of the good. Because the good cannot ascend. It can't succeed as long as he is there holding everything in suspense, holding everything in place, and ultimately holding it all back. So that's the mass deportation policy. Don't blame the advisors. Don't blame the personnel. It's him. It's coming from the top. And how sick, by the way, how sick is that? Actually, how evil is that? Trump said in 2024, I'm going to deport 20 million people. We're going to have mass deportations. And then a year in, he just decides, never mind. What is wrong with you people? Why do you vote for politicians that promise you something and then openly just betray the promise? They just openly renege on the promise. So explicitly, it's just a public 180. He said, mass deportations, yeah, we're going to have the largest deportation effort. 20 million people are going to go. He doesn't do it. And a year in, he decides, you know what? Never mind. We're going to shift gears. What? Well, then you forfeit your mandate to govern. That's how you got elected. Why do you think you're in the Oval Office? It's because people were furious that we had open borders for 4 years and we got invaded by Venezuela. Venezuela opened up its doors and they flooded our country with like 4 million people from Venezuela alone. And there were millions more on top of that. And it got so bad, even in the south side of Chicago, black Democrats are going to a town hall meeting or a city hall meeting and complaining about all the Venezuelans on the streets. It was a fever pitch. You campaigned to fix it, to provide the remedy, and a year in, you say, never mind? That's disqualifying. That's a forfeit. How is there anybody left still defending it? And you hear from his defenders, they say, yeah, well, did you see the administration's considering preventing illegals from having bank accounts? Preventing them from having bank accounts? Do they even have bank? What are you talking about? I want them removed from America. I don't care if they have a bank account. Well, but you see, if they can't have a bank account, then maybe they'll leave. Well, I want them to be forced. Why do we give ICE $90 billion to hire ICE agents and detention facilities if all we're going to do is close their bank accounts? My bank account got closed. I'm still here. It's always some five-dimensional, well, Trump is considering maybe one day closing the bank accounts, which indirectly will lead to self-deportation. Is that what the placard said? When I saw the RNC, maybe I forgot. Maybe it's the Mandela effect. I thought they had signs that said mass deportations. Not we're going to ban illegals from having bank accounts so that they'll self-deport. And then we'll have net negative migration. What is even the point then?